So what is the role of the church in society? Anyway, what does it mean to be salt of the earth? I've got some insights for you today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I hope you had a great weekend. I had an amazing time that I'll share with you in a moment. I've got some insights I believe will be very helpful to you. I think that we'll sort out some things in a very simple and clear way, and the light will go on as we talk about our role as God's people in society. This is Michael Brown, and you're listening to The Line of Fire. Now, you're not watching it today. We can't live stream on YouTube today or tomorrow. God willing, we'll be back to normal on Wednesday with our new live streaming video as well as audio. But as always, this is my voice. I always enjoy running into folks, and when they hear my voice, they recognize me. They may be among other people, and they say, wait, I listen to you on the radio. That always brings me joy. So it's my pleasure and honor to be your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. I do want to talk to you about the NFL, Vice President Pence walking out on the game between the Indianapolis Colts and the San Francisco 49ers after many of the 49ers players knelt down during the anthem. Having been at an NFL game this Sunday, I've got some thoughts and perspectives about that as well that I think will be constructive. 866-348-7884 is the number to call to get involved in the discussion today. I'm not taking random questions of all kinds like I often do on Fridays and other days of the week, so we'll be focused in the calls that we do take. But I want to speak to you specifically about our role in the society. We could look at things and say, why get involved at any level with the culture wars, be it abortion, be it sexual revolution, redefining marriage, be it some other thing happening in the culture, be it racial issues. Why get involved? It gets us caught up in controversy, and it takes us away from preaching the gospel. And the more we preach the gospel, the more we share the good news, people get saved, their lives are changed, great, and we don't get caught up on all the other things that sap our attention, like the fight against redefining marriage or the fight to save babies in the womb. Look, after all, many of us believe a baby killed in the womb, as tragic and horrible as it is, that baby goes straight into the presence of God, so it's bad, but it's not that bad. I mean, I've heard people use these arguments. These are not my arguments. Although I do believe those babies go to be with the Lord. It's not my argument that, therefore, we should just let them be killed in the womb. Same mentality, they might as well kill all babies, right? Because they all immediately go to heaven. I mean, what a sick, sick argument that would be. What a perverted, ugly, murderous argument that would be. So many people say, look, we're losing the culture wars. Look, society's going in the wrong direction. Look, we're never going to see a perfect world. Let's concentrate on prayer. Okay, I agree on concentrating on prayer. Let's concentrate on living godly lives ourselves. I agree with that. Let's concentrate on reaching the lost with the gospel. I'm all for that. I'm all for that. I'm all for those priorities in that order. Absolutely, yes. Get our own lives and houses in order, commune with God, go reach a lost, dying world around us. Yes, yes, I'm all for all of that. But the idea that it stops there, the idea that as disciples, we don't have an impact on the world around us, that I take profound issue with. And I want to explain why. And again, I believe what I'm going to get into in this next segment is going to be very eye-opening, very helpful in many, many ways. All right, 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. We will be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. I posed a question on Twitter, and I don't have the ability to ask lots of detailed questions in a poll and get all kinds of detailed responses because of the nature of Twitter. But and again, the demographics of my followers on Twitter, aside from being strongly conservative, would follow the demographics nationally in terms of those who identify as white, those who are white, but I'm saying would fit in that category, Caucasian, or people of color. The demographics would be pretty similar, my Twitter followers, to nationally, so we have to factor all that in. But I asked the question, if white athletes had sparked and led the NFL protests, would American reaction have been the same? 43% said yes, 46% said no, 11% said not sure. Now, I gave you my demographics, meaning that this is primarily a Caucasian response, a white response, primarily American, primarily white, just statistically because of folks following me and how it breaks down, pretty much to the way it breaks down nationally. So that's a significant number, that the fact that it was blacks that sparked and led the NFL protester Colin Kaepernick of mixed parenting, but obviously making a black statement and with an afro, that he would be identified a certain way by the majority of Americans. Interesting that just for 75 votes, and I just posted it minutes ago, now 47% say no, 40% yes, 13% not sure. That's interesting. And we'll get to that, especially in the second half hour. We'll talk about some ongoing racial questions, and we'll do it as fairly as we can, as honestly as we can, as constructively as we can. But back to the question of our role in the church. Last week, I read excerpts from End of the American Gospel Enterprise that I wrote in 1989. Wake up call, asking the question, is it too late for America? It's 1989, all right? I read excerpts from other books that came out within the years following that. I then referenced the 13th, I believe it was the 13th message I preached. That was either 18 or 19. And so it was 1973, 1974. And it was a strong wake-up call. Nancy is convinced that we have the tape somewhere in storage. I felt sure that it was lost. She felt sure we have. Trust me, I'd love it if she was right. Heavy New York accent, and I'm preaching away. It doesn't take a prophet to know that we're in messed up, difficult, perilous times. I mean, that's pretty much what I'm saying as this passionate teenager. You say, okay, it's the same message, man. You're preaching it back then. And I asked myself the question, if you dropped me in America in 1920, would my message sound similar? If you dropped me in America in 1840, would my message sound similar? If you dropped me in America in 1750, in the colonies, would it sound similar? And my conclusion is, yes, it would. Yes, it would. You say, well, then that proves the whole thing's bogus. It proves that all of your preaching about the decline in society and morality and all that, it's just, you're just like Chicken Little. The sky's falling, and you're just warning people for no good reason because the world continues as it is. No, that's not the case. Why do we keep speaking? Why do we keep acting? Why do we keep standing? Why do we keep swimming against the tide and going against the grain? Why do we keep raising our voices about what is right? Why do we oppose the goals of radical feminism or radical gay activism or other radical leftist goals or radical rightist goals? Why do we oppose those? Well, it's what we do. It's our role. It's our job. It's our calling. If you take us out, if we don't speak, if we don't act, everything falls apart around us. If we don't do what's right, if we don't shine the light, the society will descend into complete chaos. That's our role in the world. And if we're not faithful to it, things will get much, much worse, much more quickly. and it will become even more difficult for us to share the gospel and make Jesus known. Look, we stand against abortion because it is a moral evil. We stand against abortion because it is wrong, period. It doesn't matter what the laws are. It doesn't matter what the culture says. It's wrong, period. And therefore, we stand to save innocent lives. If you put Christians, true Christians, in Nazi Europe in the days of the Holocaust, they try to save lives. That's what they do. And what's interesting is when Christians have been interviewed later on, and some of them are nominal but just had the ethic that there's a right and wrong, and some of them were true believers. But when they've been asked, there were some citizens in France, I think they were Catholic, and they risked their lives. They absolutely risked their lives to save Jewish lives and others. And when they were asked about it, they didn't consider themselves heroes at all. They just said, well, of course it was the right thing to do. They were surprised that they got so much attention. Isn't this the human thing? Isn't this the Christian thing? Isn't this the right thing? Again, during the hurricanes, as people did extraordinary things to save other lives, it would be the odd thing to pass by someone in need when you had the opportunity to help. That would rightly get attention. That should draw attention, someone looking at you saying, why didn't you help? We saw the video. That person was drowning, and you were right there in the boat. You could have grabbed. Why didn't you help them? We are expected to do that as human beings. How much more as followers of Jesus? You say, okay, I could accept it with abortion. I could accept that it's not just a political thing, a cultural thing. We're talking about saving lives. I could accept that. But other things, laws, legalization of pot, for example, or redefinition of marriage, or maybe it's going to be change in laws of prostitution, or whatever the thing. Why don't we get involved with those? Because it's just people doing what people do. It's just the world doing what the world does. You can't stop people from sinning. You can't stop people from living the lives they want to live. And if they want to change the laws, it's up to them. And so, okay. We have forgotten that Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth. So what is one of the functions of salt? What is one of the purposes of salt? It is a preservative. Remember, the ancient world, you did not have refrigerators. You did not have freezers. You did not have ice that you could just put things in terms of, yeah, you had ice in certain parts of the world, but certainly you're just living in the Middle East, say, 90-degree weather, you didn't have ice. So, you know, you can't freeze the thing, got a electric running freezer. So one of the ways that you would preserve meat was by salting it, okay? So we are God's moral preservative in the earth. This is what we do. When we see things going in the wrong way, we stand up and say something. If we don't, the slide will be more rapid than we can imagine, especially where we have large numbers of believers in a given country. If we don't stand for what is right, if we don't shine the light in dark places, the moral depravity, the sexual anarchy, the family confusion, the laws that would even back things that are unjust and wrong and harmful and destructive, it would just be unleashed on the society. And it would almost become difficult for us to live, or almost impossible for us to live and function as believers in the midst of a world like that. We would just be continually going backwards, 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 until we're in a little cave somewhere, because that's the only place to get away from the rampant pollution that's spreading through the society. Let's not kid ourselves. When the world gets dark around us, it affects our kids and our grandkids. Let's not fool ourselves. When the world gets dark around us, it affects our own standards and our own lives. I have talked to more pastors and leaders in California and some other parts of America than I would care to say, who have told me with concerned hearts, these are godly men with strong ministries, And they did not just throw their families to the dogs when they went into ministry. They tried to raise their families in godly ways, but they didn't realize the degree to which the world was influencing their kids. And I've had leaders say to me, my kids, they're in their teens, their 20s, they don't agree with my stand on homosexuality. Why? Because of friends around them, the culture around them, the media around them, the world around them, the spiritual influences around them. We better not kid ourselves, friends. Shining light and being salt, these are things we do because this is who we are. Whether we, quote, succeed or fail is secondary to the fact that it is our job and our mission. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for being with us. By God's grace, I'm here to serve as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Do you have The Line of Fire app? Do you have it yet? It's a great app. We just had some techie folks who specialize in these kinds of things review some of our material, and they loved the app. They were really impressed with it. You'll find it super helpful, super user-friendly, and if you enjoy our materials, a great way to connect with us. So this is for your Apple phone in the App Store or your Android phone in the Play Store. Just look for The Line of Fire with Dr. Brown. Line of Fire with Dr. Michael Brown. You'll find the app. When you download it, you can listen to the broadcast anywhere in the world live when we're on. You can just click to listen to all of our recent broadcasts. You can click to access our other articles. You can stand with us there. You'll find it to be a super, super practical tool, the Line of Fire app, 866-34-TRUTH. Let me get back to being salt and light. On the one hand, I don't know how to turn the light off. Follow what I'm saying? When I am in situations where it's dark, it's natural for me to shine as light. When I am confronted with error, it's natural for me to speak truth. And I'm sure it's the same with you. It doesn't mean that in every situation we speak up and we speak out. And there are times when we're quiet. There are times when we reserve certain comments and actions because it's not appropriate. It's not the right time. It's not our job. But generally speaking, when confronted with sin, when confronted with darkness, when confronted with evil, when confronted with compromise, when confronted with social wrongs, it's our role to speak and act. Well, are you going to tell me, let's go back in time, that it was not right for Christians to oppose slavery because it's not for us to get worldly people to do the right thing? Is anyone going to tell me that, really? Don't we universally speak against Christians that accepted slavery? Don't we universally speak against Christians that practiced slavery? Don't we universally speak against Christians that decided that compromise was the better way to go? I understand at certain points in our history, say, coming together to fight against Great Britain, we had to come together despite our differences. And I understand that the issue of slavery was one from day one once we began to come together as a nation and the debate over it. I understand that. And I understand that there were Christians with blind spots because of upbringing and culture. I'm not justifying action. I'm simply saying I understand that. And sadly, we all have blind spots to this day. But is anybody going to tell me that it was fine for Christians to see the horror of the slave trade and not say anything and not do anything? Really? That was fine? That was not an issue? Hey, the world's going to be the world. You can't stop people from being the world. What? We're not trying to stop people from being sinners or stop people from being worldly. We're standing up for what's right. There is right and wrong within our society on a daily basis. And do we not have laws? And the purpose of laws is to enforce what's right and to stand against what's evil. And don't we have people in government, according to Romans 13, people in government that are supposed to oppose evil and protect good? Is anyone going to tell me that Christians should not have spoken out when it came to segregation? that we should have just accepted the unequal treatment of fellow human beings created in the image of God and for whom Jesus died, that we should just accept it because of our racist heritage in certain parts of the country. We're just, no, God forbid. Well, why should it be any different today? You say, Mike, society is far too fallen. We're gone too far to turn back. Maybe. I heard that years ago. I've read that years ago. I've seen it documented. People worked it out. I've seen quotes going back to the second century where church leaders said this is the final apostasy. I've seen that. The last chapter of Saving a Sick America will fill you with hope when you realize how dark things have been before and how light shined out of the dark. You say, but Mike, we've never been a Christian nation. Exactly. We've never been a perfectly Christian nation. And we never will be until Jesus comes and the whole world will glorify Jesus to the honor of the Father. But the goal is not to take over and make everything perfect. We're not perfect in our own lives. How are we going to make the society perfect? We're not perfect in our local church. You got 20 people in the church. You still have differences. We're not perfect there. We're not trying to make America perfect. We're trying to stand up and do what's right to be a moral preservative and shine like lights in the darkness. And to slow down slaughter and to slow down collapse and to slow down destruction, to slow down the horrible descent into evil. Look, if we didn't stand against abortion, where would it go? If there was no moral voice led by the church standing up against abortion, the other moral voices would be few and far between in the world. Maybe we'd be at the place of infanticide now, openly justified. Maybe that would be happening. Maybe we'd be euthanizing the elderly that didn't seem to have much hope for future life or much to offer in the society. Maybe we'd be doing that. Why not? Do you understand what I'm saying? If we did not stand against the onslaught of the sexual revolution and availability of pornography and the pollution of Americans today through this evil, if we didn't stand against that, and sadly we're so compromised with it in so many of our lives, but if we didn't stand against that, where would that be now? How open would things be? Would you be able to walk down the street without constant pollution all around? And then doesn't this bring us to a point where judgment comes more quickly, where destruction comes more inevitably, where God then steps in and destroys a nation, judges a nation? It's our job to be the moral preservative. It's our job, yeah, to always be holding up a stop sign saying, turn around, you're heading in the wrong direction. It's always our job. Through the church, we have seasons of backsliding and renewal within the church. It's always our job to be calling for renewal. And then when renewal comes, to deepen that renewal with the hope that it'll spread through the whole body and that it'll be deep enough that it will be transmitted to another generation and that we can fix whatever needs to be fixed in the foundations. But until Jesus comes, we're going to have these ups and downs. The New Testament makes it clear in the book of Revelation that 5 out of the 7 churches rebuked by Asia Minor, rebuked by Jesus, in Asia Minor, that 5 out of those 7 congregations, these churches in different cities, 5 of the 7 were told to repent or else. Why? This is within the first century. Why does Paul have to rebuke the Corinthians for doctrinal error and moral failure and divisions and other things like that? Why does he have to do that? Because of the fact that there's backsliding, there's compromise. That's going to be our role. We are to be a perpetual revival movement, a perpetual renewal movement, a perpetual reformation movement, a perpetual repentance movement in the church and in the world. That is our role. We do it because it's who we are. We'll be right back. Shake the
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones has now said all players will stand. If you don't stand for the anthem, you will sit. You will not play during the game. Other owners seeming to take similar stands, but when about 20 San Francisco 49ers players knelt at yesterday's game in Indianapolis, Vice President Mike Pence left. Now, some said it was all pre-planned, that he knew that they would kneel, and therefore he left. But his tweet saying that he would not stay there while the flag was disrespected is probably his most shared tweet ever. How do we sort these things out? There's no denying that there are inequalities that remain in America. There's no denying that there are inequalities that remain in our judicial system. And yet, the idea of disrespecting the flag remains a major, major issue. How do we respond to these things? 866-34-TRUTH. This is Michael Brown. I am delighted to be with you today. So to be clear, after Donald Trump made his statements that upset many of the owners and the vast majority of the players, even some of the owners who had supported him financially, like Jerry Jones, made statements. For example, Jerry Jones knelt down with his team before the national anthem to say, "We are standing together in unity." Then for the national anthem, they stood. All right? I had the opportunity yesterday, through the gracious invitation of a player on the Detroit Lions, a solid, godly believer. And if you're listening, sir, shout out to you and your lovely bride. So I had the invitation to go and the joy of speaking with, about 20-plus players and coaches at their chapel service Saturday night before they get into their final film reviews for the game on Sunday. So I had the joy of speaking to them at chapel and so impressed by their focus and taking in the word and the seriousness of our time together as I opened up the book of Proverbs with a very intense word that's been a lifesaver for me and others over the years. So no, I didn't discuss the protests. That was not what I was there for. Okay, this was bringing the word from the book of Proverbs. So at the game, I attended with my grandson, my younger grandson, Connor, who himself plays football as a big 13-year-old. At the game, I was struck by how much it does feel like a real slap in the face of the flag and the nation when players kneel. Now, none of the players knelt that I saw at the game. But I haven't been in the game in some years. I think this is my fourth football game in my lifetime. So there's just the fun of going to the game and enjoying it. But you've got the flag presentation. You've got the military standing there. You've got the call to stand and honor America. You've got the singing and the home of the brave and the land of the free. Obviously, we haven't always been that. Fully understood. Fully understood. At that moment, there is this sense of rising together in respect. You've got military men there rising together in respect for those who sacrificed, in respect for the flag. And as I had shared in some of my articles for NFL players with the hope that it would get to that, I know it's gotten to some, my point was simply this, that if you have an issue, a true justice issue, I want to stand with you. I want to join with you. I want to be your ally and be another voice for righteousness. But to protest during the national anthem is to send a wrong message. And remember, Colin Kaepernick plainly said he's not going to respect a flag that oppresses minorities. So he made it about the flag. So to get the point across, there has to be a better way to do it, because you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot. NFL player told me that when we talked, he said, "Listen, it's the protest is not about the flag," and we were agreeing. He and I were agreeing as we chatted. It's not about the flag, but when you make it about the flag or during that, well, we'll be back.
It's fire we want, for fire we please. Stand in the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm going to play a clip for you in a moment and respond to it. 866-348-7884. My goal is to be constructive, not inflammatory. My goal is to tackle controversial issues in a way that is edifying so that there is more light than heat. But we will talk about the controversies. We absolutely will. So here's something I suggested just in a private conversation with an NFL player, and he was in agreement with me, that when you have a game and you're in the midst of a close game, talking about NFL here, and maybe some guy, without the ref seeing, shoves you. It's really, you know, it really hits you. Painful place, just nobody looking. And you turn around enraged, and you punch that person. And now you get a 15-yard penalty, unsportsmanlike conduct, and it changes the game, and your team loses. What's the lesson? It's not about you. It's about the team. It's not above you. It's not about you. It's about the team. And therefore, what you have to do is restrain yourself, no matter how egregious the foul, for the good of the team, right? So if you have a cause, if you have a larger cause you're trying to draw attention to, I'm just talking about being strategic, all right? If in trying to draw attention to the cause, it makes you and your cause look bad, it ends up being more destructive than constructive, you have to rethink the strategy. Now, Dr. King was asked years ago about why certain stands were taken and did that not inflame things, and he said sometimes there's a need to dramatize. I agree with that. I agree with that in principle. I agree with that in practice. But there must be wisdom in what's going on. So if a player says, look, I don't care. Look, Trump, he said this about us, and I'm not bowing out to that man. And look, we've got issues to deal with. So, look, I understand all that, but is this the best way to get it across? Do you want fans now who came in ready to cheer for you, booing you? Do you want them chanting USA, USA, because they think you don't care about USA, whereas you do care about USA, and that's why you're upset about inequality in the society? Here, let me give you an example of something, all right? Johnny Greb, clip number one. This is 49ers safety, Eric Reed, and he's talking about Mike Pence walking out on the game. Here's what he said.
He knew our team has had the most players protest. He knew that we were probably going to do it again. And so this is what systemic oppression looks like. A man with power comes to the game, tweets a couple of things out, and leaves the game with an attempt to thwart our efforts.
That is not systemic oppression. And that's not what systemic oppression looks like. And nobody was oppressing the players. They were expressing strong differences with the players. I could say it's systemic oppression. Let's just say, I'm going to say something stupid, okay? I do not agree with what I'm about to say. I'm about to make a stupid statement to make a point, to illustrate something. I could say it's systemic oppression when I, a fan who pay good money to go to a game, all right? Let's say I'm a white fan. I'm going to say something very ridiculous to make a point. So don't react to me, but understand why I'm saying this. I go to a game. I'm a white fan. I pay my hard-earned money to go to the game to watch a game. I bring my kids along, you know, tickets for everybody. We're going to have a fun game. And now some black athlete who makes more in a year than I'm going to make in a lifetime decides that during an important time when I'm standing there with my family, he's going to kneel down and I have to explain to my kids why he's Daddy, why isn't that man standing? Why isn't he standing? Now I'm going to say that's systemic oppression. You oppress me. That's a stupid. It's not systemic oppression. No, I got personally offended by it. Okay. I didn't think it was right. I'm going there for a game. Okay. If an athlete decides that that's what they want to do, they may get fired for it because that's up to the employer to sort out. They can have their debate as to whether the person has the right to do that or not and debate that in the courts. But the question is it constructive for the larger goals, A? And B, is that the message that you want to send because of what it is conveying? And again, having been at the game, the first game on the wall, the previous game I was at, I was a guest of a general manager and sat in a booth and was not concentrating a lot of these things. And plus the fact that there was not a controversy over the anthem then. But now that it's a big issue and it's understood a certain way, all right, so if you know it's going to seem disrespectful, if you know you're going to be associated with the comments that Colin Kaepernick made, and it will be about the flag, now we have a problem. To say it is systemic, it is not systemic oppression. It's statements like this that make whatever cause is being stood for look more wrong. The vice president has every right to do what he did. He had every right to walk out, especially if the president had asked him to. And did he know for sure what the 49ers would do? Was it pre-planned? I don't know. I looked with curiosity. It wasn't a big focus at the game yesterday, Detroit versus Carolina. I looked with curiosity to see if anyone was kneeling because I'd been behind the scenes in some discussion with some folks involved and so on. I don't mean that had any influence in anything at all. I don't mean that. But, I mean, I was curious to see, was it going to affect my day overall because I was there with my grandson to have fun at the invitation of a player. But the point is, for many others, it would have made a difference. And it would seem unpatriotic and on and on and on. And it would seem to be standing with Colin Kaepernick's comments that it is about the flag. So to say it's systemic oppression, nobody was oppressed through this, okay? The 49ers players are doing what they're doing, apparently with support of their owner. And Vice President Mike Pence is doing what he's doing with support of the president. And each has their outlet to the media. And let the opinions get out. There's not systemic oppression. Where there is systemic oppression, let's address it. Let's address it. Please, let's address it. Let's point it out where it exists. Please, let's do it. I'm here to help. I'm a friend. I'm an ally. But statements like that, you shoot yourself in the foot, in my humble opinion, in doing so. All right, to the phones. We start in Des Moines, Iowa. Walter, welcome to the Line of Fire. Hello, Walter. All right, Walter's gone. We go to Baltimore. Adam, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, thanks, Dr. Brown. Just listening here, and something you said just a few minutes ago, more constructive than destructive. You know, I find that Trump's attitude and his policies are extremely unhelpful to national unity, to bringing people together. I'm a conservative. I didn't vote for Hillary. But the Bible says, blessed are the peacemakers, right? So Trump's, I don't know what Bible he's reading, but he seems to be the most, he seems to look to divide, to bring division. While, you know, islands are laying waste, U.S. territories, he's tweeting about the football. And, you know, I think we're, as Christians, we're called to love people more than anthems, more than monuments, more than flags. I don't understand why this is even, Christians would even make this a priority. The priority should be, hey, how do we become peacemakers in this nation? There's a whole lot of disinformation flying around. And, you know, last night during a conversation at my family's house, the comment was made, Trump has foot and mouth disease. And that was made by someone who voted for him and still wants to see him in power. And the follow-up comment was, well, yeah, and foot and mouth disease coming from a leader of a nation will get you into a nuclear war. It will destroy you from the inside or the outside.
And so, yeah, so Adam, yeah, that this yeah. is obviously a concern that many had, even those who voted for Trump, that his words, his rhetoric could be so inflammatory and incendiary that they would lead to a nuclear war potentially. And I've written publicly urging him to be a unifier rather than a divider. The question is though, Adam. So I'm not downplaying that. I wish things would be done differently. But as the president, isn't he supposed to also stand for the nation in a patriotic way? Don't you expect him to be in that sense the flag bearer and saying, listen, we can have differences, but not at the cost of disrespecting our servicemen and our sacrifices. Isn't that something that voters are expecting him to do?
He called the football players, sons of you know what.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That it has no place to be coming from.
No,
the
no,
White House.
Fully agreed. No, I 100% agree with the wrongness of the comment.
That's the type of man that's standing for the flag and making that comment.
You didn't answer my question, though. You didn't answer my question.
Okay.
Should he not be calling for Americans to rally around the flag and rally around our troops in a patriotic way as our president? I'm not saying he's done it the wrong way, fine. But shouldn't he be calling for that as the president?
Of course.
All right, interesting. We got a break. Interesting, I didn't get an immediate yes. Anyway, got to get some other calls, but thank you for weighing in. And yes, 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 I wish our president would not put his foot in his mouth the way he does. Yes, 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 I agree.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My poll on Twitter, which is less than an hour old, if white athletes had sparked and led the NFL protest, would American reaction have been the same? 39% say yes, 47% no, 14% not sure. Since the demographics of my Twitter followers are similar to those in America, that would mean the large majority of those responding are white, and yet 47% say the reaction would have been different, meaning that there would not be the same response, the same reaction to a white protester as a black protester. That, to me, is very telling. Again, in my article, if hands up, don't shoot isn't true, speaking of the Michael Brown Ferguson Missouri episode. If that is not true, why do so many black Americans still believe it? Because of bad experience they've had with the justice system for years and years and years and years. That's why. That's why they are less trusting of the legal system, less trusting of the police system than whites are in general terms. I believe that to be absolutely true. And that's something that I've been educated on as a white person for years now by callers and friends. At the same time, when I see misstatements, when I see unhelpful reactions, I'm going to address them. Institutionalized oppression, just standard definition here, occurs when established laws, customs, and practices systematically reflect and produce inequities based on one's membership in targeted social identity groups. Systemic oppression, similar to institutionalized, however, it is specifically enforced by the government, laws, and police. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Salt Lake City, Utah. Troy, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon. My thoughts on it are, I think President Trump really missed an opportunity when everything first started. And you know, he ran on the campaign, Make America Great Again. If the NFL players feel that there is an issue, whether it's with the flag or with what's going on in America with racial relations, I think by inviting any and all of the NFL players that are feeling this way to the White House to come together for a conference on what can we do to change these issues, and then work with them and have them put their money where their mouth is, have them work with their prospective cities on making the relations with police better or the race relations better. And I think he really missed an opportunity. And instead of bringing unity to everybody, he sort of drove a bigger wedge into the divide that's in the country right now.
Yeah, Troy, I think you speak for many. Again, you'd say, oh, come on, man, you're going to call Colin Kaepernick to the White House. All right, maybe you didn't have the right ingredients as to who the right representatives would be, because many of the NFL players are actively involved in their communities on a regular basis, but feel that there are bigger issues that America as a whole is not seeing. Yeah, so that, in fact, was my recent proposal, that if the players stood saying, of course we honor our flag and we honor the sacrifices that have been made for our freedoms, but, sir, Mr. President, there are issues in our country that you seem to be unaware of. Can we meet with you? I believe he would meet. I would hope he would. And that perhaps he could help back some of these things. I've even heard behind the scenes of at least one owner going to a team and saying, listen, I will stand with you. You show me the social issues. I want you to stand for the anthem, but I want to stand with you. You show me the issues, and I want to get behind them financially to, or politically, whatever I can, to help get word out. I'm all for the president leading the way and calling the nation to patriotism, and in that sense, feeling good about being American. Remember, he's not a prophet. He's president. He's the commander-in-chief. But you've got to do it in a way that brings maximum unity, not just to rally your base, but to rally the nation. Yes, agreed. There are better ways to do things. Let's go to, again, Salt Lake City. Crystal, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi. I hope you can hear me. I'm having problems with the phone.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here's the thing. In all history, the only way that you have to bring up to make a statement, to make everything get out there and things, to make the problems get resolved, is to basically get in people's faces with it. Everybody became a hero after they did it. But while they were doing it, they were the most hated people in the world. You know,
mm-hmm.
You understand
yep.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I say for NFL players, they're only the biggest platform is right there in front of the cameras at an NFL game to make it known that they don't, they hate this injustice of every time you turn on the TV, there's another black man, an unarmed black man being shot. For no reason, shot to death in front of a kid, in front of his kid. Here in Salt Lake, a man was pulled over for going across the lanes in his bicycle, and he ended up dead. He tried to run, and he was shot in his back several times. But the cops claimed that he was attacking them. How do you get shot in the back if you're attacking someone?
Mm.
But, you know, this is it. They're sick of it. And the example you used was the white father bringing his kids there and to the game, and they came to see the game, and these players make more money than this guy will probably ever make in his lifetime. And the kid asking, why are they taking a knee, Dad? Why are you taking a knee? Well, a good dad is going to have to explain about racism now, why they're taking a knee.
Right. So here's just to jump in, Crystal, I absolutely appreciate what you're saying, and I am all for getting the message out. But there has to be a wise way in getting it out. Because I'm just saying, being at a game, it really struck me yesterday that it looks like you are spitting in the face of the flag and the military standing there. I'm just telling you what it looks like. And that's not the message they want to convey. So I actually think there are other ways to do it that could be loud and could get a lot of attention that wouldn't do that. And when you have black and white chanting USA, USA, and upset with certain players because people just want to go to a game. Let's remember that Rosa Parks was not the first candidate to be singled out as a poster person for segregation and injustice. There was another young woman that refused to give up her seat on the bus, and they were going to make her the national figure. Then they found out she was pregnant out of wedlock and said, ooh, that doesn't work. That's not going to work. So they waited for the right person. And then the civil rights leaders wisely chose Rosa Parks. So all I'm saying is being strategic. And then many white Americans say, okay, we just read about the 500th person was shot to death in Chicago a few days back. 500th. And that's mainly black on black violence. That's 1,000 times more deadly in terms of possibility of getting shot than an unarmed black person getting shot by a cop. So there. All I'm saying is when we have the discussion, we have to have it in a way where everybody says, okay, we're listening to each other. But Crystal, I do understand that protesters will be hated and reviled. The question is it going to get the message across? That's my concern, and I'm not minimizing police brutality where it exists. Elwin, I wish I could get you your call, but as a veteran, I want to honor you. Elwin from Fairfield, California, feels the president has embarrassed himself by what he's done. Thank you, sir, for your service, your comment. Back with you tomorrow.